The first reading is from Luke chapter 16, verses 1 to 13, and then continuing 19 to 31. And it's on page 100 of the Pew Bibles. This is called the Shrewd Manager. Jesus said to his disciples, "There was once a rich man who had a servant who managed his property. The rich man was told that the manager was wasting his master's money. So he called him and said, 'What is this I hear about you? Hand in a complete account of your handling of my property, because you cannot be my manager any longer.' The servant said to himself, 'My master is going to dismiss me from my job. What shall I do? I am not strong enough to dig ditches, and I am ashamed to beg. Now I know what I will do. Then when my job is gone, I shall have friends who will welcome me in their homes.' So he called in all the people who were in debt with his master. He asked the first one, 'How much do you owe my master?' 100 barrels of olive oil,' he answered. 'Here is your account,' the manager told him. 'Sit down and write 50. Then he asked another one, 'And you, how much do you owe?' 1,000 sacks of wheat,' he answered. 'Here is your account,' the manager told him. 'Write 800. As a result, the master of the dishonored manager praised him for doing such a shrewd thing, because the people of this world are much more shrewd in handling their affairs than the people who belong to the light. Jesus went on to say, 'And so I tell you, make friends for yourselves with worldly wealth, so that when it gives out, you will be welcomed to the eternal home. Whoever is faithful in small matters will be faithful in large ones. Whoever is dishonest in small matters will be dishonest in large ones. If then you have not been faithful in handling worldly wealth, how can you be trusted with true wealth? And if you have not been faithful with what belongs to someone else, who will give you what belongs to you? No servant can be the slave of two masters. Such a servant will hate one and love the other, or will be loyal to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money.'" And then we carry on. Verses 19 to 31, the rich man and Lazarus. "There was once a rich man who dressed in the most expensive clothes and lived in a great luxury every day. There was also a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, who used to be brought to the rich man's door, hoping to eat the bits of food that fell from the rich man's table. Even the dogs would come and lick his sores. The poor man died and was carried by the angels to sit beside Abraham at the feast in heaven. The rich man died and was buried, and in Hades, where he was in great pain. He looked up and saw Abraham far away with Lazarus at his side. So he called out, 'Father Abraham, take pity on me and send Lazarus to dip his finger in some water and cool my tongue, because I am in great pain in this fire.' But Abraham said, 'Remember, my son, that in your lifetime you were given all the good things, while Lazarus got all the bad things, and now he is enjoying himself here, where you are in pain. Besides all that, there is a deep pit lying between us, so that those who want to cross over from here to you cannot do so, nor can anyone cross over to us from where you are.' The rich man said, 'Then I beg you, Father Abraham, send Lazarus to my father's house, where I have five brothers. Let him go and warn them, so that they at least will not come to this place of pain.' And Abraham said, 'You brothers have Moses and the prophets to warn them. Your brothers should listen to what they say.' The rich man answered, 'That is not enough, Father Abraham. If someone were to rise from the dead and go to them, then they would turn from their sins.' And Abraham said, 'If they will not listen to Moses and the prophet, they will not be convinced, even if someone were to rise from the dead.'" And the second reading is from Matthew chapter 15, verses 21 to 28, and that's on page 23 of the Pew Bibles. A woman's faith. Jesus left that place and went off to the territory near the cities of Tyre and Sidon. A Canaanite woman who lived in the region came to him. "Son of David," she cried out, "have mercy on me, sir. My daughter has a demon and is in a terrible condition." But Jesus did not say a word to her. His disciples came to him and begged him, "Send her away. She's following us and making all this noise." Then Jesus replied, "I have been sent only to the lost sheep of the people of Israel." And this woman came and fell at his feet. "Help me, sir," she said. Jesus answers, "It isn't right to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs." "That's true, sir," she answered, "but even the dogs eat the leftovers that fall from the master's table." So Jesus answers her, "You are a woman of great faith. What you want will be done for you." And at that very moment, her daughter was healed. Thanks be to God.
Thank you, Glenn. We are never told that Jesus laughed, while we are once told that he wept. This quotation from Dean Farrar's Life of Christ leaves an impression of Jesus which, although literally true, is one which I hope to show from the gospel stories to be far from justified. The belief that Jesus never laughed and that he did not enjoy himself with his friends has sometimes appeared widespread among Christians and non-Christians alike. We think of the loving Jesus caring for those in need. We think of Jesus saddened by man's inhumanity to man. We think of Jesus angered by the self-righteous and the profiteers in the first century AD. We think of Jesus as a wise and inspiring leader, understanding the needs of everyone. But how often do we think of Jesus having a meal with his friends, having a pleasant time, or enjoying a joke? We should not forget those occasions when Jesus was happy with his friends. The time when he went to the wedding feast at Cana. Or the more simple meal with Martha and Mary. Or the supper at Emmaus after he came back to be with his friends. Or, of course, the rather more serious meal, the Last Supper, which we can see there behind us. As Pollyanna pointed out to her minister, there are many happy passages in the Bible. She counted several hundred. If we are to give up the idea of a humanist Jesus, we need to realize and understand the humor in his teaching, how he uses ridicule, irony, and satire on occasion to bring home the point of his message. At first glance, the story of the dishonest farm manager in Luke's Gospel, chapter 16, verses 1 to 13, appears somewhat baffling. Surely Jesus is not saying that we should be dishonest. Of course not. He is simply using ridicule to expose the human folly of the farm manager as he reduces the debts of those who owe oil or wheat to his master so that in future they will be more friendly towards him. The manager is not held up for our admiration except insofar as his concern for his own future financial welfare is concerned. And that is contrasted favourably with the so-called good people who are only half-hearted in their concern for their own eternal salvation. If we can appreciate Jesus' humour, we will be able to understand more fully the meaning of his parables. If we are to believe the Christian claim that Jesus was fully human as well as divine, we must understand that irony which was part of his human nature. Despite the fact that we can only imagine the voice and manner of Jesus, there are many examples when Jesus makes his point by stressing absurdities in situations, and they're still relevant to today's readers. You may be sure that 2,000 years ago, they made his hearers smile, but they also made them think. Can the blind lead the blind? Can a man serve two masters? The hypocrisy of trying to get a speck of dust out of your brother's eye when you cannot see the log in your own eye. What is the use of hiding a lamp under a bed where it cannot give out its light? A rich man trying to buy his way into the kingdom of heaven being compared with the picture of a large animal like a camel trying to squeeze through the eye of a needle. I particularly like this cartoon. And we should also remember that, in fact, the eye of a needle was the nickname given to one of the smallest gates in Jerusalem, which was only wide enough for a person to walk through and certainly not a large animal. Or the suggestion that a loving God would behave like a father, giving his son a stone instead of a loaf of bread to eat. Thus we see Jesus using these comic examples to bring out the contradictions in human thoughts and actions. This element of gentle irony, which we find in the earlier stories of Jesus' teaching in Galilee, changes as the opposition grows from the official Jewish establishment, the scribes and the Pharisees, and the Sadducees, who were the followers of Herod. They all saw their positions of authority threatened by Jesus' teaching. A change in Jesus' approach to teaching through humour can be seen in the unusual story of the Canaanite woman, as recorded in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 15, verses 21 to 28. This incident took place in the period between Jesus' Galilean and Judean ministries. The woman came to ask Jesus' help to cure her daughter, who had a demon, or we might think of perhaps she was mentally ill. She made such a nuisance of herself that the disciples begged Jesus to send her away. Jesus says to the woman that he had been sent only to the lost sheep of the people of Israel, and therefore not to the Canaanites, who were not Jewish. This seems difficult to understand, as it appears to show that Jesus had a narrow view of Judaism, like the Pharisees, for example, and that God was for the Jews alone. And this view is not consistent with what we know of Jesus from elsewhere in the Gospels, of his concern for all people, irrespective of their race. And his command to his disciples at the end of Matthew's Gospel, "Go then to all people everywhere and make them my disciples. Baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teach them to obey everything I have commanded you, and I am be with you always to the end of the age." I suggest that in this story, while Jesus was testing the woman's faith and determination when saying, "I have been sent only to the lost sheep of the people of Israel, and it isn't right to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs," he may possibly also have been deliberately satirizing the idea of the Jews being a superior race, because this was preventing them from truly fulfilling their role as the people of God. And this attitude would have particularly enraged people like the Pharisees. We find many other examples of Jesus' biting satire, particularly towards the end of his ministry in Judea, when he would have known that his time on earth was coming to an end. We've already looked at the story of the dishonest farm manager. The parable of the rich man and Lazarus forcefully makes the point that a rich man who makes money his God and cares nothing for those less fortunate than himself will be judged by God in the life to come. Lazarus, which means God is his help, was the happier of the two, not because he was poor, but because he was a good man. The five brothers of the rich man are mentioned to emphasize that the wealthy have already had ample warning. And finally, a story which we find only in Luke's gospel, the parable of the rich fool, for whom the good news was to eat, drink, and be merry with no thought of the future. The increasing interest in the humanity of Jesus, which I've already mentioned, is reflected in the popularity of dramatizations of Jesus' life. One example is the musical Godspell, which is based on Matthew's Gospel. When I first saw it performed in the 1970s, the cast, who were dressed as clowns, brought alive the enjoyment of being a disciple of Jesus. The humour in many of Jesus' parables was vividly demonstrated as they were acted out. We're now going to hear two tracks from Godspell, All Good Gifts and Light of the World. We should never forget Jesus as Saviour and Guide, but we should also remember his friendship and laughter. When did we last laugh in church?